Coming up, we're discussing the latest on the Kawhi Leonard saga. We're also talking about Jonathan Kuminga, what's going to go on there. And then we break down everything we saw from the NBA players in Eurobasket. That's coming up right now. Welcome back to the Kevin O'Connor Show. Let's get into the latest on Kawhi Leonard and Jonathan Kuminga and Eurobasket with Mo Tekeel from Bleacher Report. Mo, what's going on, man?
Oh, man, not a whole lot. I mean, just a lot of drama, really, when we think about it, what's going on right now in the NBA. But, man, everything's good. USC is 3-0. We're 25th in the AP poll, making our way up the rankings. So life is good.
Patriots got a win yesterday against the lowly Dolphins, so I'm feeling happy. We also got some NBA stuff, right? We had Eurobasket. We'll talk about that a little bit later, with Germany taking gold over Turkey, Greece winning bronze. We got Kawhi Leonard news, Jonathan Kuminga news. Let's start off with Kawhi because, man, this is pretty big. These are some big things when you consider, oh, what's a smoking gun? What's going to be the smoking gun in all this? It feels like we're smoking a little bit more here because we got news over the weekend that at one point in December of 2022, Aspiration missed a $1.75 million payment to Kawhi Leonard. And at that time, according to Pablo Torre and his excellent podcast that unveiled all of this, that Ballmer's college roommate and minority owner, Dennis Wong, invested $2 million in December 2022. And then 9 days later, Leonard got paid that amount, as 20% of the entire staff got laid off. So they were prioritizing paying Kawhi. And obviously this is all while the company is falling apart. Now, in March of 23, Mo, Steve Ballmer, again, as the company is losing cash, they're clearly near an end. It is not a smart investment to make. He invests an extra $10 million at that time in March 2023, and that was according to The Athletic that reported that over the weekend. So, Mo, I'm sure we're going to get more stuff this week from Pablo's podcast, but what we have found out this weekend, I read this as like, this looks very, very bad for the Clippers after their initial defense of what had happened. In fact, more money was going in as this company was falling apart, and the timing is just insane.
Right. The initial report, like when Pablo first came out with his podcast, and he's done so much in terms of investigating and all that stuff, I still wasn't fully convinced, right? And you can call me naive or anything along those lines, but I was just looking at it going like, hey, there's not enough, like there's no direct link yet where I feel like just because the CEO told these people or whatever, it's to circumvent the cap, all that stuff, doesn't necessarily mean that guy could be just lying either to everybody. But the more stuff that keeps coming out, Kevin, it's just like, all right, this is just getting ridiculous at this point, mm-hmm. You know? And I think, you know, the 1% minority owner of the Clippers, Dennis Wong, being the guy to have made the $2 million investment while his daughter also worked there. Yes. And then they make the payment to Kawhi is just too fishy. At that point, you really got to start going like, this is absurd. And then now the latest bomb, you know, Ballmer dropping another $10 million in 2023. Like, this is getting pretty bad. And the way you just kind of look at it, it's like, the whole Kawhi stuff was dicey from the beginning in 2019. I know it was investigated. Nothing was found. It just, the more you kind of dig into this stuff, the more you're just like, this is just uncomfortable, man. Like, I don't like the way any of this looks, you know, whether it was just straight up circumventing the cap or just, you know, somebody else doing nefarious things. If you're the Clippers, you got to have some sort of like institutional control, you know, and have an understanding of what's going on within your organization. And this is just a terrible look for them, and it's going to put them in a really bad spot.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think we'll see with the NBA here. The rule itself in the CBA states that it can be circumstantial if there's no other reasonable explanation. Mm-hmm. And clearly that's what this is here, because it would not make sense to invest this money into aspiration unless there's an ulterior motive and another reason for doing it. You just wouldn't do that. And I just think for, like, we don't know what's going to come next. We don't know if there's an email from Uncle Dennis. We don't know if there's something like Kawhi. You know, people were saying that year as he was recovering from his torn ACL, he coincidentally started playing more often after he got paid in December of 2020.
That part's unfair. I don't buy that one.
But I'm just saying, I agree with you. But like, just for listeners who don't know, who may not have seen it on social media, I have the numbers very, you know, they're wrong. I don't remember them exactly. It was like he played, what, a quarter of his games prior to the payment and then like 70% of the games after, as he was ramping up from knee soreness for recovering from the torn ACL. So a little bit unfair. But my point is that if there's something related to that, well, Pablo will find out, right?
And I mean, Pablo finds out, man. Like, to give him credit, man, the name of the show, everything. Like, Pablo has done a phenomenal job. I was just thinking the other day, I was like, nothing would be more terrifying than Pablo Torre sending you a LinkedIn message going like, hey, I would like to talk to you about something. Because then it's like, I'm shutting everything down.
On that note, Mo, what is Mark Cuban doing here? Like, nobody is speaking more loudly about this whole thing. And Cuban moving the goalposts in this situation as well, because he goes on Pablo's podcast after the initial report. And he's like, well, you know, it'd be one thing if Ballmer is making extra payments after the initial $50 million, because how are they going to pay Kawhi if they're losing all this money and they're going bankrupt? How are they going to pay money? Ballmer would have to pay more. And then this comes out.
And that's, I mean... The funny side of it with the Cuban thing is, to me, this is just him. Look, he's basically out of the Mavericks organization. He's bored, Kevin. This is really the gist of it. Yeah, and is kind of diving in and team bomber and everything like that. I thought it was kind of a little bit ridiculous for him to go on Pablo's podcast and try to kind of refute everything without him actually really kind of knowing all the stuff. You know, like, he's not on the inside. He's not part of the Clippers organization. I thought it was kind of silly for him to do that. I didn't understand the motivation behind that. The only thing that really bothers me about this whole Kawhi thing, because I find this also slightly hysterical, they did all this and still have only made one conference finals throughout the course of everything. And Kawhi was hurt during those conference finals. Like, he didn't even play in that. So it's almost like this was the whole thing was fruitless for the Clippers. Not saying harmless. There's definitely we should be penalties attached to it. But I just find this thing really damaging for the league. As we're going into new league partners, I'm really excited about the new partners in NBC and Amazon and kind of what they're going to put together in terms of games. We have games that are going to be on broadcast TV pretty regularly. We have 75 games that are basically going to be on regular network TV, and I think that's pretty awesome. But now we're going to be talking about this the whole time. Like, this is what I think really sucks. You know, like, I'm excited for this season. We got a lot of great things coming. But now we got this hanging on our neck. We're going to have this investigation that's going to drag for like at least 6 months. This thing ain't going to be law firms when they come in. They're not trying to wrap this up quickly. They're trying to bill, Kevin. That's plain and simple. So they're not going to wrap this thing up quickly. This is going to take a while before this all gets sorted. And it's going to be hanging around all our necks for, you know, the next 6 months to maybe even a year.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely could last a while. And we'll see. Like, obviously, it's in the NBA's interest to push for this to meet some type of resolution sooner than later, because they don't want it dragging into the brand new season. And to your point, Mo, this is damaging because, like, the executives I talked to about this, A, you know, it's pretty, you know, across the board, people say, like, deals, like, sponsorship deals don't reach this amount of money. I mean, the fact that Kawhi is given, you know, X amount times as much as like these huge Hollywood stars for Kawhi not having to do anything, not actually having to be a true partner in this sponsorship is telling. And the fact is that for teams, if the Clippers don't get penalized here, doesn't it just kind of show, hey, yeah, do what you want to do? Doesn't the cap suddenly just not matter at all? Doesn't the cap suddenly become crap if this is allowed without penalty here with what is clearly circumstantial evidence, perhaps with some hard proof that at some point could be uncovered? I just don't see at this point how the NBA wouldn't have at least at some level some type of severe punishment, multiple picks, penalties, fines, suspensions, maybe not on the level of Joe Smith with Glenn Taylor. There was a literal email at the time involving that, but there has to be, I'd imagine, at least something. Otherwise, teams are going to be like, well, why are we not doing this? Why would we not do this?
Right. I think there is going to be some harsh penalties that come along this way. It has to be. You can't allow this to go. Now, look, I know Adam Silver is not David Stern, right? He doesn't come down with the hammer very often. And I think it's one of those things where this is an instance where he has to bring the hammer. He can't let this thing hang around. He can't let this kind of be a thing that sort of floats in the ether. He's got to come down with the hammer because it has to be a deterrent. Part of the Joe Smith thing was that those five first-round picks lost. Kevin McHale suspended. Glenn Taylor suspended. It has to be something where owners look at this going like, yeah, we can't do that. Like with that, that has to be a deterrent. And I think that's got to be the key thing here for the NBA as they look at the situation with the Clippers. Circumstantial evidence, not no smoking gun or not, like they got to bring it because this is too big. You know, it may not be five first round picks. It may not be voiding Kawhi's contract. But, you know, I think you want to hurt Bomber suspension for a year when they have the NBA All-Star game at the Intuit Dome is a pretty painful thing for a guy who absolutely loves this team. I think it's something that's along those lines, you know, and you got to take some of the picks. It can't just be 1 second round pick. It can't be, you know, you got to ding them for a bit. This has got to be a big one. I think it's really important that they look at that and make a point that this has to be, you have to make an example of them at the end of the day. That's the simple thing. And Silver cannot be light in this moment.
Yeah, I agree with you there. And look, I think with Adam, there's obviously shortly after he takes over for Stern, he, you know, bans Donald Sterling for life. And there's that press conference where it's like, ooh, this guy's serious. And in the 12 years or 11 years since then, it feels like a lot of people would say, no, otherwise, actually, Silver's quite soft in comparison to Stern, which is accurate and fair to say. I mean, it's different types of styles and personalities. I think Adam has been a great commissioner in some ways. I think he's pushed the game forward in some ways. I personally think I'm a pro play-in guy. I'm a pro in-season tournament guy. I'm in favor of some of these types of things. I like experimentation in the All-Star game. Other people don't. But what's undeniable is where some of the decisions when it comes to punishment, people would say he's light in comparison to David Stern. Now, this is an opportunity for him to kind of change that conversation and to lay down the hammer on the Clippers in a way that hurts this team for doing what may have happened here. And again, we'll see what comes out. Maybe there is some type of hard evidence that disproves all of this in favor of the Clippers, but maybe there's something that makes it even more obvious what likely transpired here. And I mean, just a couple other notes related to it, Mo. Over the weekend, Aspiration co-founder Joe Sandberg, he said he personally gave Kawhi the $20 million in stock, but that was after others within the company said it wasn't worth doing, including the CEO. And then another statement came out from the Aspiration co-founder saying that Kawhi's deal wasn't a no-show. And that's despite the fact former Aspiration executives said that they felt the deal was not in the company's best interest. So my, you know, outsider's perspective here is perhaps Sandberg was working independently with the Clippers here, with Ballmer, with Wong, whoever it might have been, that it was clearly wasn't a company-wide thing here. It was more of a smaller operation with Sandberg and maybe Ballmer or Wong. And in that case, that would be unsurprising. I don't think you'd have the whole company involved. They just hear, hey, here's what we're doing. We're signing Kawhi. This is what we're doing. Let's deal with it. And I just look forward to seeing what comes next, man. Because I think with Pablo, the one thing, my impression is from the people I've talked to around the league, like when they kind of look at this situation here, after the first pod, everybody was like, well, what's going to come next? Clearly, like he's not going to reveal everything on one episode. Clearly, there's still more to come up. Clearly, after when a story comes out, that's when you start hearing more things, more people start talking, more information spreads. I just can't wait to see what happens next here. What is Pablo Torre sitting on at this point that has yet to be revealed? And I'm sure we'll get something this week, Mo. I'm very excited for that episode.
I'm sure we will. It'll be, you know, I love Pablo. He's done a great job. And that's, I think it's going to be an interesting flow through everything and how he handles the flow of more information. And that's assuming there's more. I can't imagine there's much more. Like, it's just becoming so wild that he's uncovered so much already. I'd be curious to see what comes next. I just think the way the Clippers have handled this has also been bad. I thought the Bomber interview with Ramona Shelburne wasn't well thought out and something I probably would have done, unless I was absolutely sure there was no way, you know, that I've done any of this. And I think they've put themselves in a bad spot. They put the NBA in a bad spot. And, you know, frankly, at the end, it's just like, I don't understand, you know, why you went to such great lengths. I get why they did it to sign him in the first place, but I just don't understand why you keep doing it when you also weren't getting much out of him in the long run in terms of on the court. It's kind of frustrating.
And then now just they were stuck in it. You know, I think last week on the pod, I did like a solo intro to an episode and like I kind of got into a little bit of the why. My understanding is that it's because they thought there was a chance Kawhi could leave, that Miami could be a destination for him, New York, that Dallas, like these teams, he might be a threat to actually leave if they didn't give him.
Would they have met the no-show job requirements? What if he had a deal if they signed with Miami? What if he had a deal with Carnival Cruises on the side?
Well, maybe Mark Cuban would have been willing to give those. You never know.
It's wild. It's such a wild league.
But I do think there's like a bit of friction between his injury recovery timeline and fear that he would leave before they open their new arena. And so I think they felt like, well, we got it. We're in this. We already made this massive investment with SGA and the ton of first round picks. We're all in here. Let's double down, triple down, and continue trying to build this out. And yeah, I mean, unfortunately, I just feel bad. I feel bad for Clippers fans. And I feel like through all the talk about like Ballmer and the Clippers organization and all that, I feel bad for Clippers fans and all this, Mo, because like, A, on one hand, you feel like Ballmer is one of the best owners in sports. He sits courtside. He's invested, builds a brand new awesome arena. He tries to win. He cares. He's not penny pinching like other owners do. And you feel good about that. You look at the roster on paper. You get a great coach. You get a team that's at least competitive, even though they're old, even though they're not the favorites. You feel like this team's going to be competitive. There's at least a little bit of hope you can hold on to despite decades of losing. And then this, of all things, man, just sucks. Feel bad for him.
It's just brutal. It's brutal for the fans in that sense, you know. And look, before all this, like, we all loved Bomber as an owner. Great for the league. Was always kind of involved. Like this was a great thing for the NBA having him as an owner. And I think it's you know, I say in the past tense, he's still going to be the owner. I don't think they're going to take the team away at this point. But it hurts, you know, and as a fan base, knowing these penalties that are coming, like, that's a real big one. We don't know what the penalties are, but we just know something's coming. There's no way the NBA can let this slide and just be like, nothing to see here. It's going to be a situation that it's going to hurt them. They finally are digging themselves out of the hole with the whole SGA draft picks going out the door. It's now beginning to be a situation where, like, okay, we're almost out of it, and then you get dinged and have a setback like this. It's brutal, man. Like, this is going to be a tough one for Clipper fans. And I mean, I don't know what else to say anymore, KOC. Like, I feel for them. I think the situation sucks, and you know, it is what it is at this point.
It's awful. It's awful for Clippers fans. Let's take a quick break, and we'll be right back. Let's move on to the Jonathan Kuminga news. On Monday morning, Shams Charania and Anthony Slater over at ESPN had reported that we have a Jonathan Kuminga update. We now know officially that the Warriors have turned down multiple trade offers for him in sign-and-trade situations, one involving the Suns, which would have been for Royce O'Neal and second-round picks, and then one involving the Sacramento Kings that would have brought in Malik Monk in a future first-round draft pick. They're still at a stalemate now at this point. The Warriors, the latest offer they made was 3 years, $75.2 million with a team option on the third year. And I think there's a pretty clear mutual understanding between Kuminga camp and Warriors side of things that, like, we're giving you this money because we're going to trade you. Like, yeah, at some point, you're going to be part of a deal for somebody else that's out there. And then it's unlikely that he would stay in Golden State. And for Kuminga, it's understandable why you would want security over your future and knowing where you're going to play. And in this case, it's been floated, according to Shams and Slater, that a one-year super qualifying offer idea has been floated out there for a higher number at a one-year deal. The Warriors declined that. Of course, the qualifying offer itself expires October 1st. That's only for $8 million. If Kuminga did sign that, he'd get veto power on trades this year. He'd be an unrestricted free agent in 2026. At the end of the day, Mo, for this situation, it all just goes back to the mistake on draft night with Lacob, taking Kuminga over Franz Wagner, and it's been a botched developmental plan for him over the years. It's been a mismatch fit from a system standpoint with him, with his style versus the Warriors' style of play. And unfortunately, Kuminga just hasn't adapted. I think that's frustrating. I think he should be more willing to adapt, but it's also hard to ask players to change who they are and who they feel like that they can be. And Kuminga sees himself as somebody who can become a star. How do you see this resolving? What would you advise Kuminga to do if you were in his camp?
I think advising him, my first question would be like, all right, what matters to you? Just having money secured for the next couple of years? Or do you want to just bet on yourself? Like, I think that's the honest viewpoint in the way I would have it. Because for me, I would probably just take the one-year deal, the qualifying offer, have control. And then, and by the way, part of that is I have to ball out. I have to really kill it this season. More teams will have cap space next season. I will be an unrestricted free agent. Excuse me, I'll be a normal free agent, not an unrestricted free agent. I'll be able to go sign wherever I want with more cap space available across the league. I think that would be the option I'd probably try to take. I don't want to put myself in a situation where I have no control. That's me personally. I don't know what Jonathan Kuminga wants. But for me and the whole thing, with all the concoctions that the Warriors kind of keep throwing out of him, they want him to waive his early bird rights. They want him to, it's a team option, not a player option. It's always, you know, they want to have the total control of it. They want to have their cake and eat it too in the courses. And they want to sign him to a good salary because they can use him in a trade, as you said. I think the situation for the Warriors is I give him a pass on the draft. Okay. Everybody misses on the draft. I would have taken Franz. I was a big Franz fan at that point with as little draft stuff that I do. But all right, they took Kuminga. It's their development plan for them was clearly out of whack. There was no in line, no kind of a agreement with the player and the development staff and the coaching staff in terms of how we want to develop you, how we view you in our offense, and how we have you in our system. I think is really where everything started to go downhill. And then, you know, Steve Kerr very quick to yank him whenever he makes a mistake. Right. Like there's always a lot of that stuff with him. And I feel like that's kind of led to the situation they're in now and their botched development, their really inability to find him a home at the trade deadline last year has put them in this situation now. And, you know, it's kind of the roosters coming home to roost. Like, I think you're in a tough spot, but all your mistakes in the past are coming now to fruition, and now you're in this tough negotiation position with him, and he's got the leverage with the qualifying offer.
I think you're right. I mean, ultimately for Kuminga, that's betting on yourself. But Mo, at the same time, if you're betting on yourself and you're going back to a situation where you're not wanted and it hasn't been good for you, like what's going to be out there next summer for you? If this is another frustrating year, what if the best offer next summer is, you know, 3 years, $35-40 million. And you had an opportunity to take 3 years, 75 with, of course, the team option. But that's like generational wealth that you'd be passing up. I think it could be end up drop the bag if you don't take that money too.
I would bet with the Warriors. We saw what happened in the playoffs. As soon as Steph Curry got hurt, all those DMPs that Jonathan Kuminga got, all of a sudden he was getting a ton of playing times and a lot of minutes there. They need him. They need bodies to play. Like when you look at that roster across the board, like they don't have a lot after Steph, Jimmy Butler, and Draymond Green. Like, they don't have a lot. Like, they actually need, if they want to be good and not waste a year of Steph, they would need him to actually be a player and actually contribute in that season. So I think it's going to be really important that that's the thing understanding of this whole situation, whether it's a qualifying offer, whether it's he signs a 3-year deal or whatnot, and they hope they could trade him down the road. They need him to be successful. And I think they need him to play to play out. And I think this is going to be important there. So for them, just on the basketball court, they need him at the end of the day because they don't have much else after him. Because it also goes back to just they've not done a great job with their roster over the past few years.
No, not at all. They've had so many misses in the draft. It's kind of put them in this really tough pickle that they're in with Kuminga and just having to feel like, look, Shams reported that the other guys are talking to Al Horford, who has contemplated retirement, and we'll see if he would actually move his whole family out to California after spending a few years with Boston, again, winning a championship. D'Anthony Melton, Gary Payton II, Seth Curry. I mean, these are solid veterans, but these aren't game-changing pieces to support Steph, Draymond, and Jimmy Butler.
Well, they don't put you on the level of Oklahoma City, Denver, Houston. Like, they don't put you on that level. Like, they're really in a difficult position.
And that's again, why they want Kuminga, right? To your point, that's why they want him. That's why Lacob wants him, for the upside swing or trade piece. That's why they want him.
Right, but I think this is also but that should have been something. There's a level of hurt on his side too, right? All the trade rumors for what, 2 years of Jonathan Kuminga, if we can upgrade him, and like there's a level of that too.
All of it
constantly, like there's a lot of that stuff there. So, you know, it's not shocking we're in this stalemate with all this stuff, and I don't think there's a way for them to come together. I think the only option is by October 1st he's going to take the qualifying offer.
Bobby Marks had an article out on ESPN and earlier in August where he said next offseason, 10 teams at least project to have cap space. Brooklyn, Charlotte, Chicago, Detroit, Clippers, Lakers, Portland, Utah, and Washington. Those 10 teams at least project to have a huge chunk of cap space. I think if you're Kuminga in his camp, you got to be looking at that thinking, well, are any of these teams going to be willing to make a significant offer a year from now? And Brooklyn had a chance this year. They didn't. Charlotte's got a lot of forwards there. Chicago just signed Giddy. They have Matas Buzelis. They just drafted Noah Esenge. Detroit, I don't know. They need shooting. Clippers, Lakers. That was very hard to predict those situations. Portland, maybe. I could kind of see it. Utah, I don't see it necessarily, depending on what happens with Lowry Markin in there. Washington Wizards, very hard to predict, but I don't see a lot of clear teams, and that's why part of me, Mo, leans towards take the 3 years, $75 million offer with the team option, because maybe things work out beautifully in Golden State, and it ends up being like a relationship that was on the rocks that ends up becoming strong, and you become a key piece of this team, and you end up competing for championships with legends, right? Maybe that's the path that ends up going. Or if you do end up getting traded, it's going to be to a team that wants you and allows you to be the team, the player that you think you can become. I think is the best short-term, decision, because you get long-term security for you, your family, your future children, but also it gives you still the position to have success either in Golden State or to a team that trades you. And for the Warriors, obviously, that's what they want. That's why they're offering the deal, because they want to be able to be in a position to trade him for the next guy who becomes available, whether it's a Lowry Markkanen, whether they might dream of Giannis. I don't think they're going to have enough to get him, but they'd have that fantasy for him. So to me, that feels like a mutually beneficial agreement moving forward. But at the same time, Mo, I just don't see this Warriors team as a contender. I just don't. I don't think they have enough pieces. I don't have enough faith with Jimmy Butler. Draymond is not quite in his prime anymore. Stephen Curry, even he, is not quite at his prime level anymore. As these guys get older, they need more support, and the younger guys have not improved in a way that is necessary for this team. And ultimately, I just think they're a level below a lot of these other teams in the Western Conference. And no matter what happens with this whole saga, it's not going to matter when it comes to the championship race.
Well, I think the other side of it too, the dream scenario of them finding success with him, that's not, I think that is a pie in the sky situation. That ain't happening. Like, I think that's over and done. I think that's out the door.
Is that Joe Lacob's fantasy still? Probably.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. But like, that one's completely out the door to me in that sense. You know, you've so many times, you know, the conflicting stuff with Kerr and things like that. It's just not, I don't see a way that coming. They're making this deal, it's for it to be a trade move for them. Like, that's really why they want to sign him to this contract. It's a nice contract number and stuff like that. There's the other side of it too, KOC, that I think we're all kind of just forgetting. This could backfire on the Warriors, and he might not be tradable, right? Like, there's that possibility where teams are like, not as interested in him. We're not willing to give up our best pieces mm-hmm. for him or whatnot. Or the Warriors will have to attach assets to get off of him. Like, there's an situation where this does backfire on them, where if he does take that money and it doesn't work out for them and they're not able to move him or move him and get a good return back.
True. That's a good point there. And we'll see how this resolves. October 1st is approaching soon. We're already September 15th as we record this.
So quick. Well,
only a little bit over 2 weeks to go before that big date for the Golden State Warriors, and they still have a roster to fill out. So we'll see what
that's
happens.
That's the funniest thing. The fact this has held up their entire I don't think we've ever had a team not do anything the entire
free nothing. Agency. Literally nothing.
I don't think we've ever had that.
We'll be back right after this break. Well, let's move on to the guy that they passed on to take Kuminga. Germany has won gold at Eurobasket. The Germany's run continues with a lot of success, winning medals. Franz Wagner, Tristan Da Silva, Dennis Schroeder, Isaac Bonga, some of the NBA names you may know on that German team. Mo, you've been watching a lot of Eurobasket, doing some videos for Offside as well, breaking down these games. Germany won that game 88-83. That was a fun game, man. Turkey just didn't quite have enough juice down the stretch of that game, but Germany closed well with Schroeder leading the way.
Yeah, Turkey just couldn't finish it off, really. Like, they were leading most of this game, and every time it looked like Germany was going to make a run, Turkey would put it away, put it up to 6-7 points. Germany would keep making a run. It looked like that kind of game, but then Germany was able to get over the hump. Dennis Schroeder obviously makes two big buckets down the stretch and really kind of seals the win for them. Isaac Bonga, 4-for-4 from three. I was not ready for that. Really kind of going off. But the guy for the German team that was absolutely phenomenal throughout the whole course of the tournament was Franz Wagner. He was amazing throughout the way he played. Didn't shoot the three ball all that well, but the way he kind of just attacked the rim was relentless, was so quick in transition, and all the stuff that he was making, and not just that, it was the attitude and confidence that he had, and that, like, that one had me hyped up, where I was like, if I'm a Magic fan, I'm going nuts. I'm like, I can't wait to get this guy back on our blue and white and ready to roll, because this dude's ready. Like, this is a guy, we saw him kind of start to take the leap last year, got that oblique tear, and then it sort of kind of fell apart there, and then he had, his numbers were the same, were pretty similar, but it just never felt like he had the magic again. I'm fired up if I'm a Magic fan, because I just think he's ready to go with just the way he played in this one. This is a small launching pad for him, where I think he's really going to take another leap going into next season. I like what the Magic are set up to do, but he was phenomenal throughout the course of this tournament.
Yeah, Franz, look, you mentioned he didn't shoot the ball well. I mean, I would love if Franz Wagner shot the ball well, because if he does, he's had top 10, top 15 potential. But even without the jumper falling, the dude just is a winning player, Mo. Like, the defense, yeah, the awareness, the passing, the at-rim finishing, the dude checks literally every single box, everything. He's a winner, period. And I think for the Magic moving forward with him, very exciting. Very exciting to have him and, you know, Paolo Banchero and now Desmond Bane joining that roster as well. I think with Tristan Da Silva as well, having a good tournament as well for Germany. He was 5 for 9 with 13 points in that gold medal game against Turkey. Encouraging to see him taking steps as well. Dennis Schröder closed that game incredibly well. As I said, that talk now, is he an NBA Hall of Famer? I'm like, I mean, I'm a basketball Hall of Famer. He's not. There's no NBA Hall of Fame. There probably should be, but as a basketball Hall of Famer, I'd settle down a little bit there. But he maybe a couple more medals over the course of time, perhaps. I don't know, they
need some more wins before we're going to start crowning them, that stuff. But it is funny how when these guys put on the national team uniform, how they become superheroes, right? Like, we've seen it across several. Like, you know, Patty Mills, when he puts on the Boomers uniform, all of a sudden it transforms himself into another level. Like, you know, Dennis Schröder's a great example of it. You know, we've seen it from so many guys. It's pretty amazing with all that stuff. He's such an important piece for that team, for that national team. Like, this is an exciting team to keep an eye on, you know, through the course of it, because they do have some nice talent, you know, across the board. They got nice depth in terms of big men with Daniel Theiss and, you know, rolling in a good situation. Like, this is going to be an interesting team. You know, Mo Wagner didn't even play in this tournament for the most part. I think it's going to be a team to watch for going forward, but it's going to be all Franz down the road.
I just want to ask you quick about Isaac Bonga, because Bonga is a guy who really, it was a struggle in the NBA for him, but he's been really good playing in Europe. Last three seasons internationally, he shot 38.3% from three. So it's not necessarily an outlier that he shot the hell out of it in this very tiny, small sample size of Eurobasket, over 40% from three. He's been shooting well. He looked great defensively. Look, we saw Gershon Yabusele a year ago become a steal of a signing for the Sixers. Now he's with the Knicks. This summer, the Suns are trying that out with Nigel Hayes, who's over 30. I'm a bit less optimistic about him, but they're giving it a try with getting a Euro player or an American player who spent time in Europe. And then, of course, PJ Tucker in the past, you know, among others. Bonga, what did you see, Mo? Do you think he's deserving another chance in the NBA? Do you feel like this stint could be successful for him after what you saw in Eurobasket?
I think so. I think sometimes you need that time to mature and kind of get away from the league. Listen, there's a massive difference also in international basketball and EuroLeague versus the NBA in terms of just the amount of practice time you get, the time in between games. They only play like two, maybe three games in a week, you know, at most. And I feel like you have a little more time to kind of find your rhythm and your flow and whatnot. And he could be a late developing guy. He'd be a guy I'd take a flyer on if I was a team. I don't know if I'd put anything more than a vet minute out there for him, but he's a guy you definitely want to at least take a look and see, like, hey, is there something here? Is this something that can be a piece for us going forward? We know how important being able to stretch the floor, shooting 38% from three is something not to sneeze at, right? Like, that's a big number, especially for a guy like him, where you're hoping with his long range, you know, lankiness and things like that, that he'd be able to kind of help you defensively and bring a little more juice and be kind of a 3-and-D guy. It would be somebody I would take a flyer on. I don't know if it's not the same as Yabusele. Yabusele was like killing teams, you know, in a way where I think was a bit like he really kind of exploded in the Olympics games with the way he was playing, and especially and was taking it to Team USA. So I think there's a level of people felt more confident because of he was playing against NBA players in the Olympic games, meaning the NBA team, basically the USA team. So I think it'll be interesting there. I would take a flyer on him. I don't know if teams are really going to do that yet, though. It kind of sucks so late in the year that I feel like rosters are kind of set.
Yeah, and I believe his buyout date has passed as well. So this might be a next summer type of thing, unless the team is willing to buy him out. On the Turkey side of things, you know, we see Şengün spinning and taking threes and doing a little bit of everything in that game. Scores 28 points in the game. Didn't quite seem to have a lot of gas down the stretch. Ran out a little bit down the finish of that game. He played only 30 minutes. We saw Jetty Osmonds play all 40. Shane Larkin played 38 for Turkey. If they could have gotten a little bit more out of Sengun, maybe the result would have been different, but it's hard to ask. He had 28 points. He had a great game. I don't mean to downplay it at all. He had a great Eurobasket tournament. I felt like he looked like a guy ready to take a leap for Houston this year. But what did you see from the Sengun side of the Turkey side, Mo?
Aside, you know, like I thought he did everything he possibly could in this game. I mean, there were points where it was like Germany could not stop him. Daniel Theis had no answer for him. You know, he was getting cooked every which way. He didn't step out for three. He was jab step three. He had a beautiful drive middle spin baseline jump hook on Theis. Like he was really kind of, he had a smitty at 1.2. I was like jumping up and down going like, holy crap, this guy's taking it to another level. I thought he was the best player in the tournament. I don't think it was close. You know, I thought he, you know, in the biggest win for Turkey was beating Serbia in the group Serbia in the group stage. And he destroyed Jokic. I shouldn't say destroyed, but he outdueled Jokic in that game. He was taking it to him. He was doing everything in that game.
Charmander, and
it was
one of the down Charizard in that. That's what it was.
Yeah. I don't know what that is.
You don't know Pokemon?
No, sorry. No Pokemon? No, I'm an adult.
You're once a child.
Yeah, Pokemon. I'm old, Kevin. I'm old, Kevin. I know I look young and look great, but I'm old. But I just think like he really did take it to him, and I felt like there were just moments where you're just like, this is another level. And again, the whole Eurobasket, there were a lot of guys I thought who really kind of stepped up. You know, you're a Houston fan. You're looking at this going like, hell yeah, with KD coming in, our offense is going to be better. Like, you have a guy like Sengun, you got to feel super confident. I agree with you in that he's going to take a massive leap. I don't know if is he a most improved guy? Is this the guy that we should be looking at? Or is he already too far up to win most improved?
I'd say he's a most improved guy. I mean, that's the funny thing is about this tournament. Like you can make that argument for Franz Wagner as well. Like, could he be a most improved guy, you know, depending on what type of leap he takes this season? I do think Sengun belongs in that conversation. I think that's ultimately what's been great to watch this tournament, is seeing like some of these current and former NBA guys play on this stage, like Giannis. They great game down the stretch against Finland. Missed free throws by Finland. Giannis hits both. They go up three late in the game. Giannis called the Eurobasket medal his greatest accomplishment ever, even more than, you know, 50 points in a closeout game in the NBA Finals, I suppose.
I was going to say having a kid, you know. But that matters. Like, I don't think – here's the thing.
Well,
I don't think he
didn't pop out the kid.
Handed it.
It's a lot of work.
You know, the thing I don't think people understand about these national things and why it means so much to these guys is like Greece. I mean, I don't know the last time they medaled. Was the Olympics, right? Like way back in like 2004, I think, just off the top of my head. I don't know how they've done in the Eurobasket over the years, but like it's a prideful thing. You know, in that sense of representing your country, there's a level of pride. And even the Team USA guys talk about, like, it really does mean a lot for them. And, you know, for a place like Greece, for Turkey, Finland, Germany, all these places, like, it means so much to win that for the country. There's a lot of pride there. And I think it matters a ton for these guys. So I actually kind of get it when he makes that comment, and he had said like, yeah, I win the MVP. I make my mom and family happy. You know, when I win the championship, I make Milwaukee happy. But, you know, when I win the medal, win a medal for Greece, you know, that's 13, 15 million people happy. Like, he feels super, like, he's bringing joy to everybody. And I think that matters in a fun way for these guys.
Of course. And ultimately, that's why I think that in involving Eurobasket, there's the strong debate of naturalized players that are allowed to play on these teams. I think with Shane Larkin, it's a different conversation, him playing for Turkey. He's been playing in the Turkish league for 7-8 years now. And so I think it's a little bit different there compared to some of the other players like Jordan Lloyd, among others, who just sign right up for the team. And it's like, huh, really? Yeah. It's just free agency? Like, I think someone replied to me yesterday after Turkey lost. I think it was a Turkish follower who said, like, Shane Larkin can't feel the same pain of that loss that like Furkan Korkmaz can. Like he gets essentially benched in the game. They lose. Like there's real tears, emotion after the game. And I think that's incredibly fair, and it's a complicated conversation, but a complicated debate among fans, of the European basketball fans. But ultimately, I tend to side on the side of I don't think the naturalized players should be allowed unless they play like a number of years in the country and become an assistant, kind of like Shane Larkin has for Turkey.
Yeah, like Shane's a different example because he's been there for so long. Like, you know, having been there for 7 years, you know, it's a different level. And I kind of disagree with the guy, with your the person who tweeted. I understand what he's coming from, but I also think like Shane probably felt that, man. Like you are carrying the weight of the country with that, you know, coming in and putting on those jerseys, and there's a level of representing properly. Like I feel like it, you know. Listen, I wasn't a player. I worked for Team Australia. I felt it when we lost. You know, it hurt me when we lost. I was disappointed. I was pissed, you know, and I wanted to have an opportunity for the team to medal, you know, and this is 2012 London Olympics. You know, we lose the first game to Brazil, and that kind of put us on track to have to play Team USA in the knockout stage, you know, and you know, we were frustrated right off the bat. And, you know, you feel that stuff. You invest all this time. And when you're a player who's played in the country for 7 years, it's not only that, all the training camps. He's played with the Turkish team a few times. Like, this isn't like his first go in a tournament. He's been with them for a while. Like, these are his brothers. Like, this matters. I feel like he feels it. So I'm with you on, like, you got to have played in the country for a while before I feel like you should be able to play for the national team.
Anything else stand out to you, Mo? I know when we were texting prior to recording, you mentioned Lauri Markkanen, his tournament. How do you think some of these other guys in the tourney can use this as a springboard for next season?
Yeah, Lauri Markkanen was one of those guys where, look, he struggled last year after signing the contract extension. There's all that stuff that, like, he had an amazing run. He didn't shoot it well still, like I think was a problem, but he was phenomenal throughout the course of it, really kind of carrying this Finnish team, you know, all the way. He had some monster explosive plays, the way he kind of would just drive down the lane, get down to the basket, and you know, put a just dunk on people and things like that. Like, I love the way he played. And don't forget, when he first went to the Jazz, you know, and had that big run, you know, that year he ended up, I think he was an All-Star even. It was coming off the Eurobasket, right? We were all talking about how Will Hardy was incorporating the stuff he saw from the Finnish team into the offense to get Lauri going. This is a good way to kind of get him going again after a bit of a down year. I know the situation in Utah is not great with just the whole, you know, they're tanking. I'm sorry. Like, and to be honest, even if they weren't tanking this year, they're not going to be good enough. They'll probably be taking because everybody else is so good, I think, in the West. And I think that'll put him in a tough spot. But seeing him kind of rise up and play and shake that stuff off, again, it's another one of those teams and fan bases that should be excited when he comes back, you know, in October, to see him kind of get going and seeing that flow, because we want to see him kind of continue what he was doing for Finland. We want to see him continue to do that for the Jazz.
Yeah, and ultimately, I do think with Lauri, this team, they don't need to trade him to be bad, to be in the lottery. The West is too strong up top. But ultimately, my prediction with the Jazz this year is that Lauri is going to be so good that teams are going to be going after him as the final piece, because Lauri plays a style that can fit literally any system, any type of style. You play a little bit more stagnant, that's okay. He can be spot-up shooter who attacks closeouts, runs pick and roll. You play with motion and movement, yeah, he can screen for you. He can slip to the three-point line. He can slip to the basket. He can be the handler. He can be the screener. Lauri Markkanen can plug into literally any team, and I think he's the type of player, an all-star caliber player, where it's rare that you can do that mid-season with him just because just the way he plays meshes with any type of player. And so for the Utah Jazz this year, Mo, they're going to be bad. Hopefully they're fun. Hopefully there's a lot to feel good about. But with Lauri Markkanen, I think he's going to be so good, especially following Eurobasket, that teams are going to be going very, very hard after him. All right, Mo, let's talk about
To bring it full circle real quick. I really think the Warriors should have traded for him last offseason.
Oh, yeah, they
there was a
have.
Lot of smoke. There was all this stuff where they didn't want to include Brandon Podemski or whatnot. You can just add that to the list of, think, misses. I think this would have been he would be such a fit for this Warriors team that I think it was a real miss on their end. Sorry, Kevin, interrupted. I just wanted to get
You're right.
I have to get some things off my chest sometimes, man. It's been a long time before we got going again in basketball. Look, I got things to get off my chest.
You're right, Mo. And ultimately, I think that's like everybody talks about Giannis as the dream piece for the Warriors. I think it's just going to stay a dream. To me, the achievable guy to go after is Lauri Markkanen. If you can package Kuminga plus salary filler with a bunch of future first-round draft picks that appeases that Jazz front office, which would rightfully demand a lot from Golden State, you go and get that guy. Because if you're serious about winning, he's a perfect fit next to Stephen Curry, Draymond Green, and Jimmy Butler. Lauri Markkanen, to me, is priority number one for the Golden State Warriors. That's who they should be going after. That's why it's important for them to get Kuminga to sign a deal that works in a salary, because of the promise of maybe going to get a guy like Lauri Markkanen. But we'll see how that all plays out there. First, they need Kuminga to actually sign the deal.
sign the deal so they can trade him.
yeah, sign the deal. Well, appreciate you joining me to preview the Southwest Division, talk Eurobasket as well this week, and the Kawhi Leonard news. Appreciate it, man. Let people know where they can find your stuff.
Well, I'm writing for Bleacher Report again, so I have something coming out, I think, around this week. Yes, I think something happened this week. But more importantly, I am creating videos now. I'm covering the NBA this season with Offside alongside guys like Jason Concepcion. We got super smart creators with us. You can follow us on socials everywhere at Join Offside. It's going to be a new sports app content. Excuse me. It's going to be new sports app content. I'm working on like the phrasing, folks, so work with me on this one. For smart creators, you're gonna have a lot of fun. Check us out at Join Offsides on the socials, and then you can sign up to the wait list to join the app once that comes out. We're gonna be doing a lot of great stuff. There's gonna be a ton of content through the course of the season.
Appreciate it, Mo. Thank you so much for joining, man. Enjoy the lasting weeks of the NBA offseason, man.
Thank you for having me.
Big thank you again to Mo for joining me today. Be sure to check out the Yahoo Sports Network. That's our brand new streaming TV channel. That's right. We got a TV channel now. It's the Yahoo Sports Network, and that's available to stream on leading FAST services. It's also streaming 24/7 on yahoosports.tv, and that's where you can catch all of our shows on your phone or your browser. So check out the Yahoo Sports Network. Big thank you again to Mo for joining me today. He'll be back again later this week because we get our Southwest Division preview that we recorded with him. We split it up into two because we went so long. So Mo will be back later in the week. Thank you to Emmy and Dakota for producing us today. Thank you to Father John Misty for the music, as always. Thank you to you for giving us a listen. We'll be back again soon. Have a good week.